Hello all, it's Sunday evening and this is our fifth podcast. And in this episode, I want to talk about the truth and what it was like to co-author Mastering Portrait Photography, the book. Evening all, hope you're well. I'm going to try and keep the podcast reasonably short, but haven't yet figured out how to time them. I haven't even figured out how to record them, let alone get our timings right. But today I want to talk about telling the truth, being honest, and what it was like to co-author the book Mastering Portrait Photography. So anyway, why do I want to talk about the truth? Well, when I entered this business, I asked lots of questions of lots of people. And what I wanted was the truth. I wanted to know that we were doing the right things, that we were thinking the right way, and how we were doing in industry baselining ourselves, I suppose. And we'd ask lots of questions of people, and it became quite apparent quite quickly that an awful lot of what we were being told wasn't entirely accurate. It's not to say that there was outright lying, but it wasn't accurate either. People inflated stuff. They were overambitious with the facts. They like to ignore the negatives and only give you the positives. You know the kind of thing. And I'll give you one example. One photographer in particular, we were going through some numbers and she gave me some average figures, average values of shoots. And they were quite impressive, nice values. And I said, well, how many shoots do you do a year? And she gave me that number. And I said, oh, that's quite a good turnover. And I said, if you multiply your average revenue per shoot by the number of shoots you do, that's the revenue you get every year. And she said, well, no, we don't quite make that amount. And I said, well, oh, sorry, I've made a mistake in the calc. So if you're averaging this and you do this number of shoots, then this is your revenue. I mean, that's how it works. I mean, that's how you get average revenue. You take the revenue you've totaled over the number of shoots divided by the number of shoots, and that's your revenue. She said, well, I haven't included the revenue from the no spends. So the no spends are clients who've had a shoot and spend no money. I said, excuse me, you don't include in your revenue figures the revenue or the zero revenue you get from the no spends. Yes, that's right. Okay, so how does that work then? She said, well, I've given you the average revenue we get when people spend money. Yes, but that's not the same as the actual average revenue. And this is endemic in our industry. People find ways of making their numbers sound bigger than they are. And I think that's a real shame. And I think it does us all a disservice. And it's not just about revenue. It can be about the types of work people do, where they've been. People say they're award-winning for a start, but really you have to have won an award to say you're award-winning and not just because your nan says you're good. And all of this really annoyed me when I set out. And so we've always had a pledge here of telling the truth as I see it. Now, that's not the same thing as it being fact. It's just, I think it's fact. Now, somebody may later argue I got it wrong, and I'll hold my hand up and say I got it wrong. But I will always answer a question, particularly when we're doing presentations, where I will always answer the question truthfully as I perceive it to be. I won't exaggerate. I don't inflate things. I don't claim stuff that isn't true. I will always be honest, because at the end of all of this, I still feel like the same amateur photographer I always was. I have the same enthusiasm. I have the same passions. I have the same energy. I have the same excitement. You cannot believe how excited I get when I'm about to take some portraits. I just love it. I still love it, even after all of these years. And even after we've traveled all over the world doing it, and it just gets more and more exciting, not less. I'm more of an amateur than I ever was, if that's at all possible. I started out as an amateur, and yet I'm even more amateur. It's just that I'm a full-time professional amateur. And that energy from being an amateur is really important to me. And the honesty and integrity that comes with it is also important. And I wish more of it was in the industry. I do meet hundreds of photographers who are straight down the line and will tell me the truth. But I meet many who are guarded and protective and won't tell the whole story, won't show you their scars. They will always tell you, it's all perfect. It's all perfect. I'm one of the most successful, the best year we've ever had. There's a couple of photographers in particular I deal with. It's always the best year I've ever had. Honestly, we've done more than ever. And I say, okay, that's really cool. But I know from talking to other people, that's probably not true. And I can see from their blogs and websites, it's probably not true. But everyone always has to be on the up. And do you know what? We have flat patches. We have bits where it doesn't work. We try things. They don't happen. We do shoots that break your heart. But we are just all trying to make a living out of portrait photography, and a degree of honesty would be great. And this is my pledge. I will always tell you the truth as I see it. When I'm doing a presentation on stage, Sarah is there, my Sarah, who will have the numbers with her. And if someone's asked me, what's my average spend, or what's my average revenue, or what's my average shoot value, we will, or I will, tell it as I see it, and I'll cross-check it with Sarah off the actual spreadsheets to make sure I'm telling the truth. And I've always done it, and I will continue to do it. And I really hope everyone understands that in the spirit of truth, when they're answering things on the forums or emailing us, that it's really useful for other people to hear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Anyway, I'll get off that particular soapbox. I don't know why I got onto that tonight. I just felt it was important. So, anyway, let's talk about what it was like to be asked to co-author the book Mastering Portrait Photography. Picture this. It's a normal Friday. It's the 12th of September, 2014. We've just got into the studio. We've probably just drinking a cup of coffee because this email comes in at 9:29. Hi, Paul. I'm a writer looking for a photographer to collaborate with on my second portraits book. Brackets, I have a publisher and contract ready to go. My first book will be available from this November and can be seen and pre-ordered on Amazon now. Search Foundation Portrait Photography on the UK site. You would need to contribute about 200 images with model releases and input into the text. I would copyright all text. Please let me know if you're interested. Kind regards, Sarah Plater. Well, you have to understand, in our studio, we get a lot of emails. Emails asking for free shoots. Emails asking for vouchers. Emails asking for us to use their clipping services. We get a lot of those. Lots of Google AdWords ads, all of them sounding personal, and quite a few, I'll be honest, Viagra ads. Do not ask me why. I get Viagra ads in my junk folder. And so we tend to ignore them, if I'm honest. We don't pay a lot of attention to it. In particular, ones that drive me crazy are the ones with people who want free stuff. You know, the kind of email, dear Paul, we desperately need some great photography. That sounds good. For the website and for magazines, sounds better. But we have no budget. Not so good. But if you do the shoot, you get a lot of publicity. I won't, will I? I'll only get the same publicity as people who are being paid will get. So why am I not being paid again? Because you're selling the magazine and you're selling your services. Remind me why I have to do this for free. And I don't like that stuff. So I tend, on the whole, to just ignore those emails. This one, though, had something about it. And so here's the email that we sent back to Sarah Plater at 11:13. So this is about an hour and three quarters later. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for your email, and your project sounds really interesting. I think you're fairly local to us, brackets, a bit of internet Googling, brackets, so would you like to meet up for a coffee to find out a little more? Please let me know when you are free in the next few weeks. Best wishes, Sarah. Now, you'll notice from that email that we've done a little bit of homework. We've read something into her email, think, do you know what? This might be legit. So we've Googled and found Sarah Plater because she's a marketeer and writer. And sure enough, she lives locally to us. And so we decided to meet up. A couple of days later, Sarah comes to the studio and we hit it off instantly. She's really lovely. She's a great writer. You can see that straight away. And she showed us a proof. She showed us the printed proof of her first book, Foundation in Portrait Photography. And it looked amazing. And so we sat and chatted and worked out the details. And it turned out she needed 200 images for this book plus text by November. I kid you not, November. This is the middle of September, and we're talking about a November deadline. That's about 6 to 8 weeks. And I had to, at that point, say, well, I'm so sorry. There's no way I can do it that quickly. Why is the deadline so tight? And she said, well, we were working with another photographer. He was contracted in, signed everything, and it was only once we got well into the project we realised his photography wasn't good enough to be able to put in a book called Mastering Portrait Photography. Ah, yeah, that's a problem. And so they'd had to pull out of the contract with him and then build a new one. But they were trying to keep to the same publishing deadlines, at which point we had to drop the bombshell. There was no way we could do that. I couldn't produce 200 images with model release forms signed and still have a business, my own business, that was running at full tilt into Christmas. There wasn't the manpower, even though there's four of us working the business, there wasn't the manpower to be able to do that and continue to run our existing business. And so I had to say to Sarah, well, look, I'm ever so sorry. I'd love to do the project, but it will require the publisher to extend the deadline. So she said, well, okay, when do you think you could do it by? And I said, well, if we can do it from existing back catalogue, I reckon March. We could do it by March, which gives us a chance to clear the Christmas deadlines, get everything out. And then by March, hopefully, we should, well, say if we say hopefully, when you sign a contract, you have to do it. And so she said, okay, I'll talk to the publisher and let's see what we can do. Sure enough, the publisher was happy. We changed the deadline, signed the contracts, and off we ran. In my head, thinking, that's great. All I've got to do, search the back catalogue for 200 images that are the right kind of topics and get the model releases cross-checked, and we're done. And then, of course, you realise that's not going to work. For instance, there's a page in the book on different angles of light. Well, you don't do that in a shoot, do you? In a shoot, a real live client shoot, the only thing I do is try to take pictures of them that are going to look beautiful. I figure out pretty quickly which lighting patterns work, and then that's the lighting pattern I use. I don't go, do you know what, madam? I'm going to try you with narrow lighting, broad lighting, Rembrandt lighting, glamour lighting, split lighting. You don't. You just do the stuff that works, which means my back catalogue isn't full of examples of the same face lit eight ways. And there were lots of instances in the book like that. We wanted to show different lighting. We wanted to show different positions of the face. And we wanted to show use of reflectors or kit or gear or whatever it might be. And so suddenly we were faced with this uphill task of creating all these images. And on top of that, Sarah kept coming round and we sat and I was effectively interviewed. So she would ask me questions like, how do you position the face? How do you light a face? What does the shoot structure look like? How do you pick which lens you're going to use? What about angles and lines and composition and what techniques do you have? And I had to sit and think and actually formalize all of these things that I've never really thought about before because I've never really had to. I mean, yes, occasionally I was standing on stages, but most of the time I was just saying, here's this picture, this is how we did it. Here's this picture, this is how we did it. Not this picture, and this is why we did it this way. And so Sarah would sit and interview me over and over and over about different aspects of the photography, how I did things, what techniques I used. And what an amazing thing it was to sit and actually go through and talk about all these things that I do instinctively and actually figure out what it is I do and why. Now, for 90% of the time, I knew I could articulate it. I could figure out, okay, I do it like this and this is why that works. For about 10% of it, I hadn't got a clue why it worked or what it was called. And I had to go and do some homework and formalize the things that I do instinctively, which is really good fun, but really hard work. But Sarah was brilliant at it, and she'd dig and delve and chat and ask questions, and she came on some of the shoots, and she wrote all of the words that you have in the book, Mastering Portrait Photography. And what's really lovely about that from my point of view is I've had several emails from people who know me saying that the book sounds like me, but it wasn't written by me. I never wrote a single word in it. That they are my techniques and my thoughts on how to approach a shoot or how to approach the making of an image. But I didn't write any of those words. I just talked. And Sarah Plater took all of that jumbled up junk that I talk. I mean, if you're listening to this, you know I cut and change direction all the time. But she saw through all of that, boiled it down to the words that you read in the book. And it still sounds like it's come from me, which is brilliant. All of this, difficult to get everything together by the March deadline, but we did it. We got everything together. We got all of the images and we got the model releases all cross-checked and additional ones signed where we'd missed a few with particular images. And then they came down to the final bit, the cover. Now, if any of you have ever written a book, you'll know that the bit that's the most exciting is seeing it printed in on a bookshelf with its cover. So I knew we had to get the cover right. So I dug out, I think, about 20 images and sent them to the publisher and said, what about these? Came back, okay, yeah. You know that kind of thing where someone said, it's nice. I mean, this is an email. I mean, I'm guessing the editor's voice was, it's nice, but I'm not so sure. So, okay, not a problem. We then booked, in a space of a week, about 10 different portrait shoots to see if we could create a new set of face shots for the cover because they had to have, we thought, good eye contact, obviously a beautiful picture, something that would make someone pick the book up. Created another 30 or 40 images, sent them over. I don't know. And at this point, I'm getting a bit frustrated because I think these images look great. So what I did then is I thought, do you know what? I think I know what's going on. I don't think they can picture how these photographs will look cropped as a square with the logo on. So I sat down, I replicated the brand from other books of the same series, so I knew exactly how it was going to look, cropped the image square, used InDesign, dropped the logoing in, sent them back as a PDF. Sure enough, one of the very first images that I'd sent them in the original set is the one that they chose. And that's the image you see on the book today. The image is of a little guy called Ben. I shot it when he was 6 or 7 years old. It was shot in his study in his house on a Nikon D100. Nikon's what, second digital camera based on the F100. And I'd bought it on spec. My Pentax kit was nicked. I got the insurance money. And at that time, I knew that staying on film was a short-term solution. Pentax didn't have a digital kit at that time. And so I walked into a camera shop and said, what's going on in the digital market? They said, Canon have just released the D30. It's here. Nikon are about to release the D100. It's not here, but it'll be based on the F100. So I picked up a D30. I picked up an F100. The F100 fitted my hands really well. The D30 didn't. So I said, here's all of the money. Give me the first D100 that comes into London. And that's the camera that I shot the cover of the book on, 6 megapixels. That's it, just 6 megapixels. But it was shot on a really beautiful lens, the Nikon's 35-70 push-pull f2.8 zoom, which is class. It's a beautiful lens. It's clunky as hell because you have to push-pull this metal zoom. But the glass in it is really, really nice. And so it's pin-sharp, this image, even though it's a low-resolution image technically, and yet it looks great on the cover of the book. And that's how the book came to be. And at the end of this process, Sarah said to me, you know, how do you feel about it? And I said, well, I'm chuffed to bits with the book. It's beautiful. And so it's proved to be. It's getting good reviews. It's still in the charts 2 years later. It's on its second print run. I mean, it couldn't have gone any better for us. But I still felt predominantly guilt, because working collaboratively with someone is so hard when you know you're the bottleneck. It's really tricky. And our business has had to run alongside creating the book. We have a business that works 7 days a week full on. And finding the time to do all the things required for the book was really difficult. And actually how I felt most of the time was slightly guilty. Anyway, she grinned at me and said, well, do you fancy doing anything else? And I said, well, let me have a think about it, because I don't want to feel guilty anymore if I can avoid it. But over time, actually what happened was I just got more and more excited about the things that we could do in the future, whether it's to publish a second book. I don't know about that. We may do it, and it would be great to do it, but maybe in a different way. But I'd always wanted to fill in the gaps in the book that we'd produced. So although I love the book and it's full of images that I adore, of people who I really love, and the words really seem to capture how to create all of these things, it's missing details and little bits and pieces around the edges. And it would have been lovely for every image to have had a studio diagram with it, but there just wasn't the room. We were told right from the beginning how many pages in the book there would be and how many images in the book there would be. So you can back calculate how many words they're going to be, and that's that. You can't put anything else in. And yet I really wanted to be able to do more than we could. And that's what this website is. And that's the great thing. The book was such a catalyst for enabling us to do all of these other things. And it's incredibly exciting, all thanks to one email on the 12th of September, 2014. And that's where we are. So that's what it was like creating the book. I'm incredibly proud of it. I've loved working with Sarah. You'd have to ask Sarah Plato whether she's enjoyed working with us. But given it was her that instigated the whole thing and also asked if we fancied doing anything else in the future, then I'm assuming it wasn't such a hardship. And so that's that. Here I am recording podcast number 5 on this Mothering Sunday, all of these years later. I hope you've had a lovely day. And remember, be happy, be kind, be creative. The best images come from positivity and just a little luck. And always saying yes. Good night.